To be honest with you, this is the first time I'm doing like a very quick summary of this book. I actually wrote a book on this book and we're going to learn. And you can find what I wrote. It's actually I originally wrote it in Spanish. It's also in Portuguese and in English. So if you would like to see it, it's not the original book. It's like a work around the book. There's an app for it's for Android and also iPhone that I made for Bnei Noach, for non-Jews that want to continue being non-Jews. This is not our case, but whatever. And this book is available over there. The app is called Bnei Noach, just as it sounds. I'll put it in the chat if you want. I don't know how to open the chat over here. Okay. You can look in the store. Whatever, Android and iPhone, and you're gonna find this app over there in a place called Teachings. You can find this book that we're going to learn. Now, let's start. We're going to learn a very quick summary that's going to take us two classes, hopefully, of this book called Portal of Unity and Faith. In Hebrew, it's called Shaar HaYichud VeEmunah, as we're going to learn in a minute. The idea, as I just said, is to do this in two classes. Now, if we would like to learn this book for 2 years, we could do it. So you can imagine that in two classes, you have to like cut and paste all kinds of things in order to fit it into the proper time. And I'll do my best to cut the quote unquote not or less important parts, if it's in the book, if it's because everything is important, but in order, again, to fit into two classes, we have to cut certain things, certain ideas. And I'm going to, on the other hand, add some ideas that are not directly written in the book, but are going to help us to understand actually the ideas that the book conveys. As you can imagine, the book is called Portal of Unity and Faith. So we're going to talk about how God is actually one and what does it mean to have faith in God. Is this book the only explanation of these subjects? No. This is one of the places where we can learn these subjects. So let's go. First of all, let's learn about the author of this book. The author is called the Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi. He's called the Alter Rebbe. Alter actually means in Yiddish the old. Why is he called the old? He actually didn't pass away so old, 60 years old. But even when he was young, he was called an old man. Why? Because he was so mature, he had like a very old, quote unquote, head. So therefore, he's called the Alter Rebbe. He was the founder of Chabad Hasidism, and he wrote one of the most famous books on Hasidism, which is called Tanya. The part of Tanya that we're going to learn is actually called, is the second part, and it's called Shaar HaYichud VeEmunah, as it's written over there. Now, what is Tanya actually? It's called by the Hasidim the written Torah of Chabad Hasidism. As you probably know, there are two expressions to Torah. There's an expression of written Torah, there's an expression of oral Torah. And the difference between them, there are many, many differences, but the main point of the difference is that when you're learning the written Torah, the words themselves have sanctity. They're holy words. And you have to be very careful to pronounce each word properly. And each one of them has a special connection to God, so to speak. On the other hand, the oral Torah, the words, even though they are important, but they're not the main thing. The main thing is the idea, the concept. Now, this particular book that we're going to learn is actually part of the oral Torah, not the written Torah. However, when you're talking about Hasidism, and particularly Chabad Hasidism, this book, Tanya, the whole book, not just the part that we're going to learn, the whole book is called the written Torah of Hasidism. That means each word, there's a saying that says the Alter Rebbe thought each single letter of each single word, and sometimes there was a letter that he thought 1 week, a whole week, whether should I put this letter or should I not put this letter? So it's very, very precise, so to speak. And again, I have to summarize this preciseness in two classes. So we're not going to go inside each letter and We could spend again 2 years just on this. There's a story about the Tanya that when the Alter Rebbe, the author of the Tanya, presented the book to one of his colleagues, who was called Rezusha Vinipoili, he said that it's incredible. I don't remember right now if it was Rezusha of Vinipoili or the bit from Vitebsk. I think it was from Vitebsk, whatever. Whatever the case is, another Hasidic Rebbe, he said, it's incredible how you put such a big God in such a small book. Like, Tanya is not such a big book. The truth is, it's not so many pages, but it's an amazing, amazing book. The Tanya has five parts. We're going to learn just the second part of the Tanya. Those are the names you can see over there in the screen of the rest of the parts. I'm not going to translate them. Don't worry if you don't understand them. We're going to learn just the second part. Now, again, the second part is called Portal of Shaar HaIchud. Ichud means unity and faith, emuna. There's a story that questions actually if this is the second part of the Tanya or the first part. And the story is based on a few words that the Alter Rebbe wrote on this quote-unquote second part that show us that he himself wasn't sure whether this should be the second part or the first part of Tanya. Why? Because in this second part, he says, as I'm going to explain you later, but we know he explained it in the first part. So it seems that at some point, the Alter Rebbe said, this should be the beginning of my book. And for some reason, which I don't know, the Alter Rebbe decided to put this as the second part of the book. But the point that I'm trying to convey is, some people start learning Tanya from this part. And some people start from the first part and different stages of the first part, 53 chapters. Some start from the first chapter, some start on the 26th chapter, whatever. But what we're doing is not like, because one person might think, why should we start learning a book on the second part? Start from the beginning. Wait a second. The Alter Rebbe himself thought this should be the beginning of the book. Just as the name of this part of the book expresses, we're going to talk about how God is actually one. Because if you open your eyes and you see around yourself, you're going to see many things, many human beings, many chairs, many animals, many all kinds of things. So how come from one God, because Judaism says God is one, come multiplicity of things? So the Alter Rebbe is going to explain this in a very deep way. I'll try to do my best to be understood. For it to be understood. First of all, what's the structure of the book? The book has an introduction that we're going to learn, not from the inside, even though I have the book in front of me, but we're not going to learn the words inside. You can actually find the book online also. It's easy to find in Chabad.org. It's available. There's an introduction and then 12 chapters. We're going to do the introduction today and probably four chapters. And then on the second class, we're going to do from chapter 5 until the end. Or maybe we do five chapters today. We'll see how things go on. And one very, very, and I repeat, very important point over here is that if there's something you don't understand that I'm saying, and suddenly either you don't understand it or doesn't make any sense, then you should stop me, whatever, raise your hand or let me know, because the point over here is to understand. That's why that's one of the other reasons, other differences between the oral Torah and the written Torah. The written Torah, even if you don't understand, you can continue reading, like Psalms, Tehillim. If you don't understand the Tehillim, don't worry, just read. It's fine. God understands. But the oral Torah, you have to understand. The main thing is, again, the concept. Therefore, the main thing is to understand. And we're learning something that the truth is that is very deep. I try to make it easy, but it's very deep. And maybe some ideas are not so easy to understand. So you should stop me and say, this point, I didn't get it. Can you explain it again? Or in some different way, et cetera, et cetera. Again, the structure is introduction and 12 chapters. Some ideas that we're going to be touching on the class in general, very brief and general ideas. Wait, what did I do? Okay. I'm sorry. Very brief and the general ideas. We're going to talk about meditation. The meditation in Hebrew, I didn't write it down, but it's called Isboinenus. We're going to talk about how God actually does the creation. How does it come to be, the whole world? We're going to talk about a concept called tzimtzum, contraction. We're going to talk about names of God. We're going to touch about deep ideas. Most of these ideas, not all of them, most of these ideas are also spoken in Kabbalah. Are we going to learn Kabbalah? The answer is no. Are we going to mention and sometimes go very deep into concepts of Kabbalah? The answer is yes. But the rabbi said, we're not going to learn Kabbalah, and now suddenly we're learning Kabbalah. So what's the point of here? And the idea is like this. We're learning Hasidus. What's the difference between Hasidus and Kabbalah? Kabbalah is like a map of creation. Tells you what levels are, what the names of these levels are, all kinds of very, very interesting things. Does it apply to like practical life? Most of the times, no. Sometimes, yeah, but most of the times, no. On the other hand, Hasidus, Hasidic thought or whatever, Hasidic teachings, they are more aimed to be practical, to be easy or at least available to apply in your daily life, in your prayers, in your relationship to God. The Hasidus puts a man, woman, it's the same thing, a man in front of his creator and tells him, hey, have a relationship. Kabbalah is not about so much a relationship. Kabbalah is like, look, this is what God did. This is the creation, whatever. Just like a map. You can take a map and look at the United States and you say, yeah, Florida is over here and the Seattle is over there. Very nice. Are you going to Seattle? No. Okay, but it's over there. Oh, yeah, interesting. And that's it. Hasidus tells you, look, if there's such a thing as called Seattle, you should go over there and see the rain and see the people and see the places. There's such a thing called Florida. Oh, go over there. You'll see the sun and you'll feel the sun. And these different places teach you and show you different ways to relate for your relationship to God. So the main thing in Hasidus is relate to your creator, to your creator, to your master, so to speak. Main thing is Kabbalah is you should know there's such a thing called Seattle and Miami and Florida. There's such a thing. Okay. This is a basic, very, very basic difference. So again, we're going to touch upon ideas that are written in Kabbalah, but not because we're learning Kabbalah. I have no problem in learning Kabbalah, but that's not the point. The point is, let's try to understand how can we improve our relationship to God according to these ideas that we're going to learn. Let's go on. The introduction of the book, it's relatively short and really full of content. The Alter Rebbe, this is very interesting. The Alter Rebbe himself wrote the introduction and he put a name to it. Usually, you just say, okay, the introduction of the book, the prologue of the book is ta-ta-ta, and somebody else writes it. That is a very interesting book and you can learn many things and go on, read the book. Here, the Alter Rebbe himself wrote the introduction and he put a title to the introduction. The title is Education of the Young. How do you educate a child? However, even though that's the name of the introduction, and that's the picture I put, whatever, I looked up a picture of a rabbi teaching a child, the introduction itself doesn't really talk about chinuch, I mean, in education of children. Even though the concept that is touched upon on this introduction indirectly talks about chinuch, talks about education. And I'll explain to you why. I have a story that happened with me, a very short story. I could make it very long. I'm not going to do that because I don't want to spend so much time on the story. But basically, again, it's a long story, but basically, I was one of the guys. There was a group of young couples just married. The men were in a car going to one place. And we shared the ride for like 10 minutes, not more than that, with a huge, great rabbi. Incredible guy, passed away already a few years ago. Rabbi Zwiebel was his name. He was so knowledgeable, like you could take a piece of paper with a few letters that came from a book, and he would tell you, this is page ta-ta-ta of this book, and you can find it over there. A huge mind, an amazing, amazing person. But he didn't talk so much. If you pushed him, you could take a few words out of him. He didn't talk so much. He was very humble. So we were riding with this guy. He was sitting in the front seat. somebody else was driving, and there was a bunch of us, like five newly married men in the car. And everybody was like, we should ask something to rabbi. So whatever, let's bring him out something. Let him say something. So one of the guys asked, again, newly married couples, okay, we're all newly married. We want to know what's the most important thing you should teach your children. This is what the guy asked. And all of us were, wow, what a good question. Great. What is he going to say? The whole ride, he said one word. Just one word, answering the question. And everyone was wow. What did he mean? Just said one word. The word was in Hebrew, he said, hisboinenus. He had a very like this. He spoke very grave, like that. Hisboinenus. He just said one word. And everyone was like, what? What did he say? And the ride finished. He said goodbye and he went to his house. What did he mean? What's hisboinenus? Hisboinenus means meditation. I wrote it in the previous slide. Meditation. What about meditation? What's meditation? Meditation means be conscious of something and spend time thinking about this. Because if you really make the exercise of spending time to think about a specific idea, then you're going to incorporate this idea. It's going to be part of your life, actually. But if you just think about it like really quickly, oh yeah, there's a world, yeah, there's a God, I believe in God. Okay, next. When's the breakfast? No. You're not going to incorporate this in your life. You can know it. And if somebody asks you, you can answer, yeah, God, yeah, he's a huge guy, infinite God. Oh, very nice. But if you don't really dwell upon it, forget it. It's not going to change your life. So this is what he said, is Boynemus. Many, many years afterwards, this happened like 25 years ago, many, many years afterwards, after really like sitting and learning the book, he was referring to the introduction of this book that we're learning. Because even though the introduction is not really directly talking about children and you should teach your children to be good guys, he's not talking about that, but he's clearly saying, look, the only way you can really relate to God is if you spend time thinking about him. And what should I think about? Like, there are so many things I can think about. So the Alter Rebbe says, think about all the books that I'm writing to you. Which book? The second part of the Tanya. This is what the introduction says. Now, let's go to a little more detail. The Alter Rebbe brings over here in the introduction that the main thing that a person should have in mind is to love God and to fear God. We could argue for hours which one comes first. We're not going to do that. The book doesn't really talk about that. There are other parts of Tanya that talk about that. I'm not going to go into that. Whatever. Just I chose this order. You could say it in the other order. Yes, but let's not go deep into that because we're going to spend a lot of time just talking about that. That's not the point of this class. It can be the point of a different class, but not this one. So the main thing a person should know is to love God and to fear God. Why? Because the love of God is the source of all the things you do for God, 248 commandments, positive commandments. And the fear of God is the source of everything you don't do because God said, don't do it. That means 365 negative or not do commandments. That's the source. When you do something for somebody, it's because you love that person. You give yourself to that person. When you fear, and not because somebody's going to hit you, like you can fear your husband, you can fear your wife, not because she's going to hit you or because he's going to hit you, don't hit your wife. No, you fear, you're afraid that she's going to be disappointed by you. You're afraid that you're going to lose her love or something like that. That kind of fear. The same fear we can have for God. Not because he's going to punish us. No, because he's going to be disappointed with me. He creates me every day. He puts me in the earth. He gives me a mission, and I don't do it. He could be disappointed. I'm afraid that he's going to be disappointed by me. So that's the root of God's service. Those are the two main things. Now, the Alter Rebbe asks, wait a second. It doesn't make any sense to command a person. I underline, I'm sorry. to command a person to love God. Doesn't make any sense. I can't put an arm on your hand and say, love me. It's not gonna happen. It's a feeling. What do you mean, love me? I can do things for you, I can be a nice guy, and with time you're gonna stop loving me. Okay, that's nice. But to order you to love me, no, I don't love you. I'm sorry. So what does it mean? The Alter Rebbe answers very simple. He takes this answer from the Rambam also. The Alter Rebbe answers that look, there are two types of love that a person can feel. There's a natural love, like when a father loves a child. You have a baby, just born baby. This baby, what did he do for you? Nothing. He cries the whole day. He gets dirty. I have to change him. I can't sleep. But I love him. It's my baby. Yeah, really? Why? Doesn't make any sense. Yeah, because it's my baby. Whatever. It's my son, my daughter. I love her. So this is a natural thing, natural feeling. It's a part of me. I love it. But then there's another type of love. There's a love that you have to actually make it, produce it. That's why I wrote done. I didn't know any other English word. Like you have to create this love. How do you create love? By thinking about the great things that this guy, this person does for you, this person represents. So you start loving this person or an object. When you think about all the good things that this object does for the humanity and the ta-da-da-da, you start loving this thing. So the Alter Rebbe says, God is commanding us not to loving because naturally we love God. We have a neshama, we have a soul inside of us, and the soul is a part of God. So the soul naturally loves God. You don't have to tell the soul to love God. It's obvious for the soul. However, this soul is invested in a body, in an animal soul. I'm not going to go into the details of what the animal soul is, the godly soul is, whatever. That's another part of Tanya. But the point is that the soul, even though naturally loves God, has many, many difficulties to express this God. Because the body says, what do you mean, God? Where is God? I want hamburgers, not God. I want alcohol, not God. I want drugs, not them. Don't talk about God. What do you mean, God? I don't enjoy God. So you have to teach the animal soul, hey, God is good for you. Because he gives you this and he gives you that and creates the world, ta, 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 ta. And the animal soul says, oh, so he's a good guy. I like him. I like this guy. It's good for me. I like him. That's the produce, the created love. So when God commands us to love him, he's not saying your natural love, yeah, that's natural, that's okay. He's commanding us to meditate, he's commanding us to think about him, to create love inside of our hearts. How do you do that? You have to think about him. Again, meditation. But there's a reality. After all the nice meditations and ideas that we're going to learn, there's a reality. Some days you're really up and everything is okay and you have a smile on your face. And the truth is that some days you're really down and you don't have a smile on your face and things are not so nice and not so smooth. Things just don't flow. And it's a reality. We're human beings and we change. God doesn't change, we change. And you might think that all this produce, created love inside of you, you're going to lose it because today is just not a good day. What can I do? So Alter Rebbe says, wait a second, when this happens, you can go back to the natural love that you actually developed when you started learning. In other ways, in the same thing, but in other words, when you're young, things are more exciting and more ideals and more, oh, I'm going to change the world. When you become older, you say, I can't even change myself. What do you mean, change the world? So, but when you're young, you really have energy. When you lose that energy, remember that you had that energy at least and go back to it. And that's going to actually sustain you and keep you going. That's why the Alter Rebbe says the introduction to this whole book is, again, education of the young. Remember that at some point in your life, you actually felt good about God. You actually felt proud to be a Jew. You actually felt proud to be religious and you liked it and you enjoyed it. It's like the first time you give a siddur, a prayer book to a boy, you say, so happy, yes, this is my prayer book, and these are my tefillin, and I'm putting it. Yeah, 2 months afterwards, he says, oh, again, tefillin. Oh, again, I have to daven every day. I'm already, oh, yeah, I have to go to the synagogue. Okay, wait a second. I know that's going to happen, says the Alter Rebbe. It's natural, it's normal. You're a normal person. If that didn't happen, if that wouldn't happen, it means you're a tzaddik. Ooh, you're not a normal person. You're some other kind of person. If you have ups and downs, you're fine. You're normal. But I'm going to give you a tool, says the Alter Rebbe. I'm going to give you a tool for your downs. For your ups, you don't need tools. You're fine. Continue excited. That's okay. Love God. That's fine. When you're down, oh, I'm going to give you a tool. You know what the tool is? The second part of the book. Think about God. That's what the Alter Rebbe says in the introduction. Now, let's go to chapter one. I divided this whole thing, as I told you before. The structure of the book is introduction and 12 chapters. We're going to go a small summary of each chapter. Let's go step by step. Now that we know that so to speak, objective of the book is to give us tools to think about God. Because again, you can tell me it's boinu nus, it's boinu nus. Yeah, you have to think about God. But what should I think? So these are ideas that the Alter Rebbe is going to give us to think about God. The first idea that the Alter Rebbe shares, it's like one of the basic ideas of Hasidism that I'm not so knowledgeable to say what's more important than what. I have no authority to say what's more important than what, but I would say this is one of the most important ideas. After the introduction, that I should not say that, I'm going to say it anyway. But this is one of the most important ideas in Hasidism. Why? We're going to learn this in a minute, but first I want to explain why this is important. Because according to this idea that we're going to learn, we can easily, so to speak, quote unquote, easily understand that anything that happens in the world is God making it happen. Like some people ask, in World War II, all the Holocaust, the wrong called Holocaust, whatever, Shoah, destruction. Where was God? Why didn't God do anything? Was he sleeping? He forgot about us? You know what? The question that person might ask, the question itself, it's understandable, but it's wrong. You're asking the wrong question. Because God, like it or not, continually, this is what the idea actually is, continually creates the whole creation from nothing into what it is. So the question is not, where is God? God is over there. And again, like it or not, he is creating that. And he is in charge of his creation at that particular moment that a person is suffering. Like in this parsha of Kukoisai, we learn all the opposite of blessings. It's full of them, full of terrible things that the Torah says, to the point that it says that mothers are going to eat their children. You know, it's crazy for any mother to think such a thing. It doesn't fit in my head. However, there was a time that this happened. Why? Such a hunger, such a difficult life, etc., etc. Destruction of the first temple. Some say even destruction of the second temple, same thing happened. So it's terrible. Again, you can ask, why, where is God? Why does he allow this to happen? The question is wrong. I'm sorry. The questioning is okay, but the way you're asking the question is wrong. God is making this happen. How do you know this? Oh, let's learn first chapter of Shalich Lemuel. The Alter Rebbe brings a pasuk, a verse from Tehillim. This is in Tehillim 119. I didn't write it down. The Tehillim says, for always, okay, the Lord exists forever. Your word stands firm in heaven. What does that mean that God's word stands firm, whatever, in heaven? It means that the creation depends on God speaking, talking all the time. His word not that he created the world 5,784 years ago, and the world is like functioning, and God is whatever, sleeping on with doing whatever he's doing. No. He's constantly creating the whole world, second to second, microsecond to microsecond, nanosecond to nanosecond. He's constantly creating everything. And this idea is conveyed by the Baal Shem Tov. This is what the Alter Rebbe brings over here. The Baal Shem Tov is the founder of the Hasidic movement, and he brings this idea connected to this verse. God, your word is always standing firm in heavens, creating everything from nothingness into somethingness, so to speak. And the Alter Rebbe brings the idea that this word of God, that we're going to learn much more details, many more details about this idea in the end of this 11th chapter, 12th chapter. So we have to keep this idea like in the back of the mind. But in any case, the words that God speaks constantly, they create everything, and they are the soul of everything. And the Alter Rebbe brings the example of a stone. That's why I wrote down stone and the words and of God, the 10 utterances that God used to create the world. That those words are the soul of every single thing in the world, even stones. And the Alter Rebbe asks later also, not just in this chapter, we don't see in the words of creation. If you learn the first chapter of Bereishis, of the beginning of the Torah, we don't see the word stone. It's not over there. We see the word light. We see the word heavens. We see the word water, whatever, all kinds of things that God created. But we don't see the word stone. And this is what the Alter Rebbe asked. Well, you can ask the same question about dogs, whatever. You don't see the word dogs. There's no cats in the creation. What do you mean? How cats come to be? So the Alter Rebbe explains. He's going to go deeper into this later, but the Rebbe explains that the words that God used are such a deep and strong energy, creative energy, that they can't just directly create the world just as they are. These words get combined, one with the other, adding, subtracting, as we're going to learn later, not today, but whatever. In this combinations of words, exchange of letters, et cetera, they become all the single creations we see in the world. All the creations, even the stones. So according to the Arizal, which is a big Kabbalist in Tzfas, year 1500s, according to Arizal, even the stones have souls. What does that mean, a soul, that the stone speaks? No, it means the godly energy inside of the stone, making it exist. This is the basically, very, very basically, the first chapter of Shaarei Chodamunah. Again, what can you think about when you think about God? The first thing you can think about is God is creating everything. Does this mean we understand this? No, not necessarily. Maybe we're going to understand something later. But the point is, God talks constantly and creates the world. Why is the example of talking used to create a world? Because actually God doesn't have any mouth, he doesn't have any shape, any body or anything, he doesn't talk. So why is this example, this idea of talking used to show, express the fact, the act of creation? Because just as when you talk, your words are heard all the time that you're talking, you're making like the effort of talking, the work of talking, and therefore your words are heard, your speech, your ideas are heard. And when you stop doing this effort, your words got lost. Maybe there's a few seconds that your word still exists, but if it's a very strong thing, more than a few seconds, but in any case, it's going to stop. It doesn't have an existence by itself. The words depend on you to exist, on you talking them in the same exact way. The whole creation depends on God. That's why we use, actually, the Torah uses the example of talking. The whole creation depends on God talking. But then he has a mouth? No. He doesn't have a mouth. It's an example. It's an idea. None of the ideas, none of them, that come from Hasidus and Kabbalah, etc., etc., mean that actually God is like that. No. It's just an idea, just an example. This is like lawyer number one of understanding. There's another lawyer of understanding, which is a little bit deeper. Has nothing to do with Shalich of the Emunah, what we're learning. But I think it's like some kind of mind-boggling thought that I like to share. I heard it once, and I think it's appropriate to share. And the idea is like this. We say that God talks in this example. Or we say, the Torah says, God took us from Egypt with a Zroya Netuya, with his arm extended. Oh, really? God has an arm? And he extends the arm? No. So what is he talking about? What does the Torah say? And the idea is like this. When you have a doll, like girls like dolls, you have a doll. Okay, the doll has an arm and has legs, etc., etc. It's not a real arm. It's a doll, it's plastic, whatever. It's not a real arm. And if you take the arm out of the doll, some girls like to destroy everything, it's okay. When you take the arm out of the doll, does it hurt the doll? Nah, it's just a piece of plastic. It's just a toy. And it's okay. You can take it and put it back. It will do whatever you want. And that arm of the doll is actually representing the arm of a human being. And if you take my arm, oh no, it's going to hurt. So don't do it. But you take the arm of the doll, nothing happens. So now, again, you have a doll, represents a human being. Is a human being? Is it really a human being? No, it just represents it. Can be a nicer doll, an ugly doll, I don't care, but it just represents a human being. It's not a real human being. Now let's go back to Torah. When we see our arm, like a real one, quote unquote, the real arm, this is just representing the real, real arm of God. So when the Torah says that God took us out of Egypt with an extended arm, oh, that was the real arm. What is it? I don't know. I don't understand it. It's something it's beyond me. And not because I'm Tuvi and I don't know anything. It's because it's beyond human beings. Forget it. We don't understand what the arm of God means. What we do understand is our arm, quote unquote, the real one, just represents, like the doll represents my arm represents the real arm, which belongs to God, which I don't understand, just that the doll doesn't understand what's my arm. It's just like an idea. I think it's a deep idea, but it's an interesting idea to understand what the creation actually is and why God talks, quote unquote. He doesn't have a mouth to talk. Our mouth only represents the real mouth, God's. Okay, this is first chapter of Shalich of the Moon. Let's go, let's move on. Chapter 2. The Alter Rebbe brings a very interesting idea also, explaining how the creation is something from nothing. In Latin, this is called ex nihilo, whatever. Something from nothing. And there's the Alter Rebbe brings in this second chapter a comparison between two types of creation. That both, the most important thing is, both are called creation. It's not that one thing is creation, one thing is not. What's the comparison? A potter, somebody that like the image over there, there's somebody that works with clay or something like that. Or it could be also with metals, with gold, with silver. It's the same thing. And God's speech. Two different types of creation. If you give me clay, I can play with the clay and I can have fun, but I'm not really good at that. So something is going to come out, but not so nice. Like nobody's going to pay anything for that. If you give it to an artist that really knows what he's doing with his hand, et cetera, something nice is going to come out. But did the artist actually create, or did I actually create the clay? No. The clay is just a piece of clay or a piece of gold, a piece of silver, whatever. And the creation, quote unquote, of the artist is to bring out from this material one of the almost infinite shapes it could have. Why do I say infinite? Quite almost infinite, because actually you have a piece of material with a size, with a weight. You cannot create anything. Like if I have a ball with this size, I can't create a Boeing 737. No, impossible. It's too big. You need more material. So it's not infinite, really, what I can do with such a ball of material. But the shapes that this ball could actually take are almost infinite. Almost infinite. If you're an artist and you know what you're doing, you're going to create something that to the eyes of people is going to represent something and be nice. Whoa, what a nice cup you created. What a nice thing of clay you created. If you give it to somebody like me, then I don't know the art. So I'm going to create something, but it's not going to be so nice. So that's the art, so to speak, of the artist. That's the greatness of the artist, to create something that looks nice or serves a specific purpose. Okay? That's his, so to speak, creation. That is in his, that is in his hands or her hands, whatever, not on mine. Because I didn't learn this, I don't know how to do this, etc., etc. But the point is, the main point over here is that the artist is not creating the material. And that means that when the artist removes his hands from the material keeps the shape. It doesn't lose the shape. Like suppose, again, a potter works on the pottery, works on the clay, finishes working on the clay, and removes the hand. Does the thing that he created lose the shape? No. It remains the shape. If it's nice, it's not nice, that's another business. But the shape is over there. However, that's the potter creation. God's creation is completely different. God's creation means that he's, again, like we explained before, he's constantly talking, speaking, and that speech gives life to the whole creation. And at the second, for some reason, chas v'shalom, God forbid, God would stop speaking, everything will go back to nothing. Immediately, as if it never existed. Why? Because naturally, nothing doesn't become something. The natural state of nothing is to be nothing. So there has to be like some external action, external involvement for nothing to become something. That external input has to be present over there constantly in order for nothing to continue being something. I'm going to give you an example in a minute. When this external influence stops being, nothing goes back immediately to the state of nothing. And the most important part of all of this is that even when something is actually something, it's not really something. Example, suppose a stone. When you throw a stone, if you learn some physics, there's a whole bunch of mathematical numbers you can make on the force, the vector applied on the stone for the stone to actually fly. You throw a stone, and the stone starts flying. Woo! Okay. Why is the stone flying? Like regular science, no Kabbalah, no nothing. Why is the stone flying? Because there's a force that somebody or something, whatever. Let's suppose I threw the stone. So I applied a force on the stone. This force is stronger than gravity, and therefore the stone is flying. Woo! When my force ends, for whatever reason, the stone is going to just go back to its natural state, which is, so to speak, quote unquote, united with the earth, whatever, laid on the earth. That's the natural thing. That's the natural state of the stone. It doesn't fly. I took it out of its natural state. I made it fly. And for some reason, my force ended, and the stone goes back to its natural state. This force would be God's speech, that he makes nothing becomes something. So as long as the force is applied into nothing, so nothing becomes something, like the stone flying, as soon as the force stops applying on nothing to become something, this something becomes again nothing. But the novelty over here is, again, the catch, so to speak, even when the stone is flying, if a person, not me, I threw the stone, I know what's going on. If somebody else is looking at the stone, and the stone suddenly is flying, right? Wow. Will you think that suddenly you saw a flying stone? Not a stone flying. It's not that I saw, oh yeah, I saw Tuvia throwing a stone. Yeah, he's crazy. He's gonna kill somebody. No. Does anybody really think that there are stones that fly? Wow, I saw a flying stone. I saw a stone that actually flies. Not because somebody threw it. I saw the stone flying. The stone flies by itself. Nobody's going to think this. You're a fool. You don't know anything. There's gravity, there's tuvias, there's the throwing stones. No. Stones don't fly. Only because somebody made the fly stone, the stone fly. I'm sorry, so the stone flies. Otherwise, by itself, the stone doesn't fly. Even when it's flying, it's not really a flying stone. It's somebody applying a force on the stone, and the stone is flying. Oh, okay. With this example, let's go back to creation. Even when you're looking around you and you see a whole world and the creation, is that does it mean that there's actually a creation that exists by itself? No. It's God talking. That's all. And because God is continuously speaking, so you see a creation. But that doesn't mean that the creation has an existence by itself. It's not a flying stone. No. The stone is flying because somebody is applying a force into it, not because naturally flies. In other words, the stone does not acquire the quality of flying just because it's flying. No. The stone continues being a stone, and the natural state of a stone is to be laid on the earth. Is this concept like understood? I don't see anybody saying thank you, something I see. So
Yeah,
I
yes,
assume we get
it's
understood.
very intense, but yes, understood.
Okay, Baruch Hashem. So let's go. This is chapter number two of Shara Ichud Ve'emunah. With this chapter now, after the first chapter, when we understood that God is continuously creating, now we can understand that creation, it's again an ongoing process. And even when the process is happening, that doesn't mean that the creation actually exists. And don't compare that to creation, something from something, which is the example of the clay, is something out of something, which we're not diminishing the wisdom of the artist. That's great, but it's something out of something. That cannot be compared to the creation of God, something out of nothing. Let's go to chapter number three. According to what we learned, the Alter Rebbe in this chapter is going to introduce an idea that's going to be with us almost for the whole rest of, sorry, almost for the rest of the book. He's not going to mention the idea in all the chapters, but the idea is like in the back of the mind for the rest of the book. We're going to go into this idea in a few minutes. But first of all, after chapter one and chapter two, now we're able to understand what's the, so to speak, quote unquote, don't misunderstand, what's really the value of creation? Value, I mean, now how many dollars did you pay for it, or how much would you pay for it? No. I'm saying, what's the value of the creation in front of God, so to speak, in the eyes of God? Now that we understand that the creation is like God's words, he's continually talking. Okay, let's think about we human beings talking. What's the value of a word? And I'm not saying, again, don't misunderstand me. If a person is going through a hard time and somebody comes and says, I love you, that's really invaluable. Like, you can't put a price to that. That's okay. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying something else. I'm saying, how much effort do you really, really invest in what you say? Not so much. Example. Suppose there's a in university, And somehow the university arranged for the, I don't know, physics Nobel Prize to come talk to the students. And the students are so excited. Wow, this guy is amazing. He just won, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And the guy comes in, everybody stands up, and they go, okay, everybody sits. And the guy says, good morning. And everybody starts, wow, clapping their hands. Amazing, guys. This guy knows so much. You're insulting the guy. He didn't even start talking. He just said, good morning. Any fool can say good morning, even if he doesn't win any prize of anything. Anybody can say good morning. So don't clap your hands because I'm saying good morning. If I teach you great things about physics, okay, you can clap your hands. I'm the Nobel Prize of physics, you know? But for saying good morning, you're insulting me. That's an insult. Why? Because there's not much effort invested in saying good morning. It's quite easy. Sometimes some people think you don't have to say good morning. It's okay. You have to say good morning. I'm not talking about like good middos, good behaviors. You should say good morning. And I would say, you should always go first and say hello to the other person. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the precise effort of just talking, just saying good morning. It's really effortless. Nothing, nothing, nothing. So let's go back to creation. God talks and creates the world. What's the value of creation? Insignificant. What do you mean? Furthermore, and we say actually this verse, I didn't write it over here, but we say the verse every single day in the morning prayers. Ki beyud kei avai yetzur ilamim. God says the Talmud, God created the whole world with two letters. This world he created with the word, with the letter hey. It's just a letter, whatever. If you don't know what a hey is, it doesn't matter. It's just one letter. And the world to come was created with one letter, word, the letter yud. So wait a second, wait a second. Open your eyes, look around. There are thousands of birds, thousands of plants, thousands of human beings going up and going back and forth in cars and this and that. And this guy just got lost, just lost his work. And this guy just had a son. And this guy, all kinds of things in creation. How much effort is invested by God into all this very complex world? One letter. The letter hey. That's all. Try it. Hey. Yeah. Very easy. Again, hey. Really easy. And for God, super easy. That's the whole world. Just one letter. So now that we understand that the whole world was created by God and the speech, and he's constantly speaking, blah, 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 the first two chapters, immediately you say, hey, wait a second. But the world is really insignificant compared to God. Just as one letter is insignificant to my capacity of producing letters. So if you actually clap your hands because I said, good morning, what do you mean? You don't know what I'm able to say. I can tell you the whole physics of the whole world and all that, and you're clapping your hands because I said, good morning? No, no. I don't accept it. No. So if you actually, what comes out of this? If we praise God because he created the world, we're actually clapping our hands because he said, good morning. What do you mean? You're saying that I created the world. That's why I'm so big and so important and such a nice guy. Creating the world is like saying the word, the letter, hey. And you're praising me because I said, hey, what? Imagine whatever you call a rabbi to give a class, and this rabbi and he has a whole introduction of the greatness of this rabbi, and the rabbi says, hey, that's a whole class. Hey, he just said one letter, and everybody's clapping their hands. What do you mean? A whole hour saying, hey, I don't clap hands. What is this rabbi? He doesn't know anything. So we're clapping hands to God because he said the letter, hey. What? No, we should praise him for something else. Okay, for being God. Okay, we can argue this, we can discuss this, let's say for a different class. But the point here is to be conscious that the whole world, because, again, we learned the first two chapters of Sharik Vemuna, because the whole world is just the words of God, automatically is insignificant in front of it. Doesn't have any quote-unquote value. Why do I say quote-unquote? Because actually he wanted to create his world. So he wants this. It's not that something came out of him and he didn't know what he was doing and okay, there's a world and a bunch of people over there. No, no, no. This is what he wants. And he's expecting us to fulfill a mission, etc., etc. So the world actually has a value to him. And it's very important to him. And that's why he puts us in this world. And that's why he gives us a Torah. And he tells us, I want you to do this, don't do that, etc., etc. So the world is important to God. Definitely. But what I'm pointing is not the value of, I don't have another word, but this is the only word that comes out of my head right now, value, but not the value that God gives to the world, but the value of effort invested in creating the world, insignificant, nothing, just a letter hey. But the truth is, the Altrebe continues in the third chapter, the Altrebe doesn't bring the examples of the physics or anything like that, that's my addition, but the Altrebe brings in the chapter that we don't see these words of God in the creation. We don't see that. And furthermore, if we would see that, the Altrebe is going to bring this later in later chapters. If we would see that, then we would not be able to see the world. It's one thing or the other. And when Mashiach comes speedily in our days, we're going to see both things. But that's a paradox. That's not like a normal thing. That's what Mashiach means. That's okay, and that's for a different discussion. But the point is, right now, we don't see this energy. We just see the world. And the rest of the book is to explain why do we see the world and not the energy of God? How comes this happens? The first explanation the Alter Rebbe gives is an example of a sun and a ray of a sun. The Alter Rebbe, first, before even mentioning the example, the Alter Rebbe is not giving us, it's not, I underscore, it's underline, is not giving us a class on physics. The Alter Rebbe knew also this, and he knew also many, many ideas, but the Alter Rebbe is not giving us a class of physics. The Alter Rebbe is using a model to explain an idea. Even if this model, according to modern science, is not true, and probably it is not true, it doesn't really matter. Because, again, the Alter Rebbe is not teaching us how the sun works. You want to understand how the sun works? Go to astronomics and ask, and it's a ball full of helium and hydrogen or whatever the sun has, and whatever, go learn physics. And you're gonna understand how a star works and what the sun is. This is not a class about physics. This is not a class on the sun and the functioning of the sun. This is a class on Hasidus. Now, again, the Alter Rebbe is going to bring a model that don't compare it to science because you're not going to be able to do that. But that's not a problem. That's what I want to point out. It's not a problem that this model actually doesn't fit with modern science. And maybe it doesn't fit either with ancient science. Doesn't really matter. It's just a way to understand something. He could have used a different example. Yeah, he could have used that, a different example. There's an example also in the human being, but he decided to choose this example. I don't know why. In other Hasidic works, different examples are given, but this is what the Alter Rebbe brings. Sun and ray. The Alter Rebbe says the sun gives rays, and therefore we can enjoy the sun, enjoy the light, enjoy the heat, etc., etc., and that's why there's life in the earth, etc., etc. Okay, sun gives rays. The ray of the sun is, so to speak, outside the sun. The sun is like very far from here, and it's shining upon us, and we enjoy the ray, not the sun itself. If the sun would be here, forget it, we're all burned out. So the sun is pretty far, and the light of the sun comes into the earth, and we enjoy the ray. This ray that is outside of the sun, if outside of the sun is so powerful, that means, says the Alter Rebbe, that inside of the sun, the same ray exists also, and in a much powerful way. However, there in the sun, in its source, the ray is completely nullified. This word, nullify, annul, whatever I put annul over there, in Hebrew is called bitul. This is one of the words, bitul means nullification. It's one of the most common words in all the Hasidic works. One of the most common words. Why? Because at the end of the day, this is not the subject that our book talks about, but to understand why is this word so famous, at the end of the day, what God asks from each one of us is bitul. What does that mean, bitul, nullification? You like, of course, it's a stupid example, but just an example. You like eating cheeseburgers? Okay, I'm so sorry. Don't eat any more cheeseburgers. Because God said no. Hey, but I like it. And God said no. Hey, but I don't care. He said no. That's it. No more arguments. Okay, I'm not going to eat cheeseburgers. That's bitul. So for any activity you want to do, you have to ask yourself, what does the Torah say about this activity? What would the rabbis, so to speak, whatever, God say about this activity? And I have to check, would this activity be okay in the eyes of God or not? That's called bitul. That's called bitul. Let's go back to our subject, so to speak. The ray of the sun. Again, the whole creation is like the ray of the sun that is produced by the sun, quote unquote. The sun in this case would be God. I'm not saying, do not misunderstand, I'm not saying that God is the sun or the sun is God. No, it's just an example. Just as the sun produces rays and everybody enjoys the rays of the sun, the same way God produces a world and everybody enjoys and uses whatever his world. But we should know that just as the ray outside the sun exists, the same ray exists within the sun. But within the sun, the ray is not called ray, it's called sun. Example of a different idea, but the same exact same concept. And this is what I meant before when I said other examples can be given to the same idea. The Alter Rebbe chose this idea. Okay, I don't know why, but the same idea. When you think about something, anything, whatever, you have a thought in your head. That thought is about, I don't know, water. Okay, I'm thinking about water and the water flow, blah, 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 blah. Is there water? No, it's just a thought. It's inside my head. Could you actually separate between your thought and yourself? No. I could talk about it. I can say to somebody else, look, I've been thinking about the water and it's very nice and it flows and blah, blah, blah. And my idea would go into somebody else's head and somebody else would say, oh yeah, Tuvi is thinking about water and it's very interesting. Okay, so my idea just went out of me and went into somebody else's head. But while this idea is inside my head, it's me. It's not the idea on one hand and me in a different... No, 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 it's just me. Whatever. I'm thinking about water now. I can be thinking about sun now, whatever. So again, this idea is not separate thing, different thing than me. It's just me. Why? Because it's inside of me. The same thing happens with the sun and the ray. Out of the sun, we see a ray, and the ray seems to be a thing, whatever. It's a ray of the sun. But inside the sun, the ray is nothing. That goes back to the first line of this slide, that the creation is insignificant compared to God, just as a ray of the sun is insignificant to a sun. But even though the Alter Rebbe gave this example, he himself questions this and says, but wait a second, there's a catch over here. Something is amiss. Is there anything outside of God? Like if you want to say that the sun represents whatever God and produces rays, or produces the whole creation, like the words of God. The ray actually would represent the words. God talking and creates the creation. Oh, very nice. So we have a world and we have God, and God produces the world. Very nice. And the world is so small, it's just like saying the word, the letter hey. Oh, yeah, it's insignificant to God. Very nice. But wait a second. Is there anything outside of God? Because if you're going to answer yes to this question, oh boy, we have a problem. Because God has a limit. Here he starts. Here he finishes, and there's something else starting over here, and whatever finishes somewhere else. I don't know, but it's outside. Now, forget it. You just threw the whole Judaism in the garbage can. Forget it. It doesn't work. There's nothing outside of God. So the Alter Rebbe, again, he himself questions his own example, like saying, oh, I'm trying to explain the insignificancy of the world in front of God compared to God by this example, but it doesn't work. The example is wrong. That's the beginning, so to speak, of chapter four. Okay, let's go. This chapter four, actually, there are three chapters in the whole book that are like so important, like the main thing of the book. This is one of them. It's relatively a long chapter, relatively long. And then chapter six and chapter seven, if until now your head did not blow, so wait, it's going to blow away. That's my job to make your head blow. Okay, let's go to chapter four. In order to understand this whole problem we got into, that actually, of course, the Alter Rebbe wrote the whole book and he knew what he was writing, and he got into the trouble on purpose, so to speak. He knew what the trouble, he knew how to produce the trouble and how to destroy the trouble, so to speak, arrange the trouble. So he himself got into trouble because he said, look, the whole creation is like a ray of a sun outside the sun that this does not have its own existence. And even when it's inside the sun, it's not a ray, it's sun, etc., etc. But the whole creation is actually like a ray of the sun inside of the sun. So the question arises, why do we see a creation? We should not see a creation. We should see God, only God, because we are like the creation, like the ray of the sun inside of the sun. We should only see God, not a creation. So Alter Rebbe explains like this. In order to start his explanation, he brings a verse from Tehillim. I forgot right now which chapter this is. Peidalit, I think it is 84. I think it is 84. So the Alter Rebbe brings this verse: "Kishemeshumagen Hashem Elokim." If you know Hebrew, you will see that I changed on purpose one of the names of God that actually should have four letters: a Yud, a Hey, a Vav, and a Hey. In this particular book, the Alter Rebbe doesn't go deep into each letter, what each letter means. There's a different book. The Alter Rebbe goes into that. It's called the Igeres HaTshuva, which is very interesting, but not the subject today. The point is that David HaMelech, who wrote most, not all of them, but most of the Tehillim, most of the Psalms, David HaMelech is saying us, actually the source of the Alter Rebbe's example, that David HaMelech is saying, Shemesh, I'm going to translate a little bit different because of the order. I'm just going to translate from the Hebrew, like literal. Because sun and the covering, the shield, God and the Lord. This is like the literal, I know that doesn't make much sense, but bear with me. It's just a literal translation following the order in Hebrew. The correct translation is what I wrote over there. For the Lord God is sun and shield, whatever, that's okay. But the point is that we have something called sun. We have something called shield, a covering. And that's compared to two names of God. One of them we're going to call Avaye. It's over there, written. I'm going to explain why we call it like that. Patience. I'm sorry. And the other one we're going to call it Elohim. I'm going to explain this step by step. Let's go step by step. First of all, we have to understand what a name means. A name is just like an interface to express an aspect of yourself. That's a name. Like for yourself, like when you're alone, just me. and I'm thinking about whatever I want to think, I don't need a name. Okay, my name is Tuvia, but I don't really need that name for me. I don't call myself Tuvia. I call myself me. And again, when I'm alone and it's time for me, so to speak, I don't care about anything else. It's just me with myself. Maybe it's 3 seconds in a day. I don't care. But in those 3 seconds, it's just me. And I don't need a name. Nobody's going to call me. Nobody's going to say anything. It's just me. And I'm fine with that. However, when the 3 seconds finish, somebody say, hey, Tuvia, I need you to do this and that. Like, okay, so this other person is calling me. How does this other person identify me itself and not somebody else by my name? And that name, again, is an expression of what I really am. It's not that because you know my name, you have me. Now, you don't know who I am. You don't know what I do. You don't know anything about me. You just know my name. And when you call my name, I'm going to turn and say, oh, yeah, that's me. So again, the name is just an expression of something. Maybe a very small part of something, but it's an expression of that something. And it's an interface to connect to that something, to that particular expression of something. More simple example, my children call me Tati. So to them, even though they know my name is Tuvia, yeah, that's fine. But to them, I'm Tati. But my friends don't call me Tati. What do you mean, Tati? You're not my father. I call you Tuvia, not Tati. So for my friends, I'm Tuvia. And when somebody says Tuvia, I turn and say, oh, yeah, oh, how are you? When my children call me Tati, yeah, oh, yeah, I'm Tati. But when my wife calls me Tati, I know there's a difference. Wait a second. My children call me Tati. Yeah, I'm Tati. I'm the father of my children. Baruch Hashem. But when my wife calls me Tati, it's not the same thing. It's the same name. Yeah, right. The same words, letters, but it's not the same. Come on. No. When your wife calls you, it's not the same when your children call you. Okay. With this in mind, God has infinite names, not just two. We're going to talk about two. But actually, in later chapters, the Alter Rebbe brings another one, three, whatever. God has infinite names. The Ramban, Nachmanides, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, wrote a commentary on the Torah, a very interesting commentary. He brings in the introduction of his commentary that the whole Torah is just names of God. That's the whole thing. Interchange, combine letters here and there, addition, subtraction, whatever. Play with the letters. But the whole thing is just names of God. Why? What does that mean? Again, expressions of God. In this chapter number four, the Alter Rebbe brings, again, this verse that mentions two names of God. And these two names of God are really different, really express, just as a name expresses something, these two names express two very different things of God. Does that mean that this is the only thing that God knows how to do? No. God is infinite, and he has, therefore, infinite names. What does that mean? That he could do, he could think, say, whatever, infinite things. But he decided to express himself in these particular ways. Things that he taught us are his names. Look, when you say this, it means like a password, like a code. If you say this, it means I'm going to do that. If you say that, it means I'm going to do the other thing. It's like a game. So when you say the name of God of four letters, Yud, K, Vav, K, that expresses how God is infinite. I read it over there in Hebrew and also in English. Was, is, and will be. Like the three things at the same time. Hey, wait a second. Past, present, and future are not the same. The three things cannot exist, coexist at the same time. Okay, welcome to God. He's infinite. He doesn't have a limit. He can be in the past, the present, and the future at the same time. This aspect of God is expressed by a name called Havaye. What is Havaye? This word does not mean anything. Nothing. We could have said blah, blah, blah. Okay, the name of God, blah, 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 means Havaye doesn't mean anything. Don't use it in prayer. Don't call God Havaye. You're saying like very nonsense. Why do we use this word? Because this word has almost the same letters, almost in the same order as the real name of God, of four letters, a Yud, a Hey, and a Vav, and a Hey. But we don't know how to pronounce this name. And we don't want to say this name just like that, because that's actually one of the Ten Commandments is don't pronounce the name of God just like that, in vain. So how do you refer to this name? We say Avaye. Who came up with this name, with this idea, this word Avaye? I have no idea. But again, this doesn't mean anything, okay? Don't pray to God with this thing, because it's nothing. Doesn't mean anything. But we're going to call it Shem Avaye. Shem in Hebrew means a name. And Avaye is just referring to this particular name of four letters that expresses infinity of God. He was, he is, and he will be. Past, present, and future. Infinity. Okay, that's one name. Let's go to the second one. Shem Elohim. Elohim by itself, this word as it's written over there, Elohim, also doesn't mean anything. So don't pray to God saying, Elohim, Elohim, because it's like trying to call me and saying, I don't know, Michael, Michael, I'm never going to turn. My name is not Michael, I'm sorry. It's a nice name, but it's not mine. So you can cry and scream the whole day. I'm never going to turn to see if you're calling me, because I'm not calling Michael. Elohim doesn't mean anything either. But we use this word to refer to a true name of God, which is written there over there in the first line. I don't want to mention it because, again, there's a prohibition of mentioning the word, the name of God, in vain. So we use this made-up Elohim name to refer to that particular name of God, which means like the Lord. What is this name Elohim? This name Elohim, in Hebrew, each letter corresponds to a number. And when you add the different letters of a word, you come up with numbers. When you add up the letters of the word Elohim, you come up with the number 86. When you add up the letters, I wrote it over there, of Hateva, nature, again, you come up with 86. So that means that Elohim is related, this name Elohim, which again doesn't exist, it's just a reference to something else. This name Elohim is the same thing as the nature. What is nature? What does that mean, nature? So the Alter Rebbe has a whole explanation on this. And the point of the explanation is like this. We call nature anything that we're used to see and we do not recognize as a miracle. The fact that the sun comes out every day, it is actually a miracle. Who told you the sun has to come up? Again, let's go back to the beginning of the whole book. The creation, it's new and renewed every nanosecond. Even the sun, even the earth, etc., etc., and each one of us with our whole story. Because not that, unless you're like have a mental problem, but you don't forget your whole story every second. Oh, I'm a new guy. I forgot. What was my name? Okay, I think you need a psychiatrist. You don't remember your name. So we have a whole bunch of ideas and stories and experiences. We remember that every day if you're normal. So God is also creating that memories all the time. Okay, that's called nature. We are so used to that we don't recognize God behind that. We don't see God. Actually, the word teva in Hebrew means nature. Hateva is the nature. Teva means nature. Comes from the word tuvu, something that is sunk in the sea. Like when we read every single day, the opening of the waters, that the Alter Rebbe talks about this also. I didn't bring it so much over here, but the Alter Rebbe talks about this in this book, the opening of the Red Sea that the Jewish people went inside when they went out of Egypt. And the verse says, Tuvu Vayom, that the Egyptians, they sunk into the sea. And it's exactly the same word, Tuvu, to be sunken, and Teva. It's written this basically the same way. So Teva, nature, what does it mean? That God is, quote unquote, sunken into the reality. And we don't see him. We just see the world. And nobody actually asks, why is the sun coming out? What do you mean? Go learn some astronomy. Everybody knows why the sun comes out, because the earth moves and the sun, whatever, and the orbits and the blah, blah, blah. And the sun has to come out, so to speak. Nobody thinks that tomorrow the sun's not coming out. unless you have some kind of, again, mental problems. Everything's okay. Don't worry. Sun is coming out tomorrow. However, that's what we call teva. So just to like to finish with this slide, let's go back to the beginning of the slide. Shemeshu Mogen Avay Elokim. The verse itself, David HaMelech, King David is saying, look, there's a sun, quote unquote, sun. We call him just referencing to God. God is not the sun. And there's something that shield, there's a shield that covers the sun, that does not allow us to see the sun. An example of this, simple, very simple example, which is not perfect, but is an example, is we live in the earth. And if the earth wouldn't have a whole covering of oxygen and all kinds of air, whatever, I don't know exactly what it is, we would burn out also. The sun is so powerful, it would burn us out. So we need a shield on the earth, atmosphere on the earth, to protect us. That's the covering of, what is it called? Ozone, I don't know in English what it's called, ozone, whatever. So we need that to protect us. The same thing happens with the sun, quote unquote, that means God, his creative force, and the shield, Shem Elokim. Shem Elokim covers, quote unquote, the sun, Shem Havaye, in order to create for us the reality of a world that actually exists and looks independent of God. So there's a very deep relationship between these two names. One creates, gives infinite, and the other one restricts, completely restricts, in order to hide the infinity of Havaya. This is the first part of chapter 4. I think we're going to stop over here because the second part is going to go further with this idea. And hopefully, in the next class, we're going to go fourth chapter and finish the whole book. Just as a very, very short and quick summary, we saw the introduction. In the introduction, the Alter Rebbe says, I'm going to give you material to think about. I'm going to give you tools to contemplate who is God and what and who are we in his creation. And then we saw the chapter one. We, first of all, understood that the creation is an ongoing process. That's like the main thing of chapter one. Then in chapter two, we said that there are two types of creation, something from something or something from nothing. And the nature, so to speak, of the creation, the definition of creation, something from nothing, is that has to be continuously kept going on. If you stop it, like the flying stone, if you stop the force, the stone falls. That's the nature of the stone. So if you stop, so to speak, the God stops talking, forget it. That's it. No more creation. That's that chapter two. Then we saw, according to what we learned before, that the creation actually is nullified in front of God. It's insignificant compared to God. It's like one letter compared to the capacity of a person of producing letters. And we started, so to speak, a problem, quote unquote, and it's not really a problem, but whatever. We started a problem that apparently, if you're going to tell me that this whole creation is like the ray of a sun inside of the sun, why don't we see the sun? Why don't we see God? We see a creation, we don't see God. And the first part of chapter one, we defined what a name is. It's an expression of something. For instance, my name, Tuvia, is an expression of myself. Tati, Tuvia, rabbi, friend, etc., etc. Son, father, whatever. And we saw two names of God. That doesn't mean that these are the only two names. No, 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 no. Infinite names, but we saw two names. One has the function, expresses the idea of infinity in God. And the other one has the function, expresses nature that covers on infinity, covers on the presence of God in the whole world.